Oscar Podcast.
I got my finger on the trigger, but I don't know who to trust. When I look into your eyes, there's just devils in dust. We're a long, long way from home, Bob. Home's a long, long way from us. Feel a dirty wind blowing. Devils in dust. I got God on my side, and I'm just trying to survive. What if what you do to survive kills the things you love? Fear's a powerful thing.
Hi, welcome to a special edition of Oscar Podcast. I'm Sasha Stone with awardsdaily.com, and I'll be talking to the director of Black Mass, Scott Cooper. Hope you enjoy our discussion.
Scott? Hey, Sasha Stone. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. And thank you for being so supportive of my work, I hear.
Oh, yeah. Hey, no problem. I love love Black Mass. But, you know, it's funny because I've been following your career for your whole career. Not so much as an actor, but, you know, with Crazy Heart and through, you know, Out of the Furnace. And now Black Mass. And I think that it's interesting to watch. I don't think I've ever seen a director rise so quickly like that, just from one movie, just to do so well. So congratulations on that. It's really...
Well, thank you, Sasha. I had a very unremarkable career as an actor, and though I only have 3 films under my belt, I certainly have found my passion, and it's certainly on this side of the camera. I'm thrilled that people tend to respond to my films. Now that I'm taking Black Mass around, the amount of backdated love for Out of the Furnace is really quite gratifying. People really have responded to Crazy Heart. I think Jeff's, you know, so remarkable in the film, and it has a lot of heart and warmth. But Out of the Furnace is a tougher film, but it's nice to travel the world and here and at home and have people really respond to it as they are this one. So thank you for saying that, Sasha.
That's great. So I've listened to a couple of interviews with you, one with Friedkin, actually, that I thought was really interesting. You remind me a little of him, a young William Friedkin. I was wondering...
It means a lot. I have to say, for a guy like that to really embrace my work means the world to me, because his films are largely why I became an actor and a filmmaker in general, and it started with Out of the Furnace, where he reached out to me, and then we've become a little closer since then.
Oh, that's great.
So thank you for saying that.
And I was just going to ask you a couple of things. I was wondering if you wanted to talk, I had a hard time finding information about you, you know, just about who you are, your upbringing. I know you grew up in Virginia, in the hills of Virginia, and I know that you became an actor and that you quickly started writing and you wrote your first screenplay, which you didn't direct, called...
For Sale by Owner.
Yeah, For Sale by Owner, which I haven't seen.
It was directed by a guy who directed me in an Animal Planet film called Rain, where I played a young Vietnam soldier who's on the front lines with his dog, hence the Animal Planet. But, really the crux is I'm from a small town in Virginia called Abingdon, which is kind of the crown artistic jewel, I think, of the state of Virginia, where the State Theater of Virginia is. A great deal of arts and crafts in that particular region and music, both bluegrass and roots, traditional country, which, of course, influenced my love of the likes of Waylon Jennings and Merle Haggard and those guys, which really motivated my writing Crazy Heart. So I thought for my first film, that actually my first two should be both very personal films. Apart from that, I then moved to New York, and I I was actually studying at the Lee Strasberg Institute for a bit before I moved to Los Angeles, which is a much easier and cheaper place to live when you are unemployed. But fortunately, was able to be in a couple of films with Robert Duvall, who became a really close friend and mentor, and has really probably helped me more artistically than anyone.
Wow.
In terms of shaping my kind of artistic worldview as it relates to cinema and my kind of naturalistic and humanistic approach to material that sometimes can, I guess for better or worse, emotionally tax the audience.
Hmm. Yeah, I was thinking more like you're drawn to self-sabotaging characters, or characters who are kind of imploding rather than exploding. Mm. And then some of them, in Out of the Furnace, it was more about, I think, turning into, and Whitey Bulger certainly, but there are, like, despite their best efforts to be, you know, good guys, they're kind of, they wrestle with their demons, and that seems to be consistent throughout your work. You're drawn to darker subjects, you know?
Well, indeed. I do tend to be drawn to kind of the darker recesses of the human psyche, because you can't really escape it in life. You can't really turn on NPR in the morning, or you can't open up the Times and not be confronted with all the different levels of darkness that exist within humanity, whether it's it's Assad, or whether it's yet another mass school shooting, or it's a police officer who is swindling money and then ultimately stages his suicide. So we're confronted with this all the time. And I then just in general tend to be drawn to people who kind of live on the margins of society, those that are kind of dispossessed or those that are forgotten, because those tend to be the people that are most interesting to me. So if there's any theme, some thematic continuity in my work, it's probably what you said combined with what I just mentioned.
Yeah, I'm wondering, I too sort of grew up in a small town, and, you know, I tried to be an actor like 30 years ago or whatever it was, but I kind of know what got me out of my town, but what was it in your life that made you say, you know, I'm going to leave Virginia? And do you ever feel now like you want to go back to that sort of life, or did you just feel frustrated by the kind of,
well,
you know
the truth is I was a young actor from a very young age, doing some stage work. And I think people become actors because they want to be noticed. Hey, mom, dad, look at me. Right. That's truly why my daughters put on little skits, or why it's all about attention.
Yeah.
Otherwise, why do you do what you do as an actor? So from that, it grew really into my love of being around others who loved artistic endeavors. Mm-hmm. Again, whether it's theater, or whether it's because there was no film in Virginia, mm-hmm. or whether it's music. And I was around a lot of musicians. People, potters, people who really love the arts in general. And that never really went away from me. So when I lived in New York, I attended in the 90s, when New York was a really interesting place, and artists could actually afford to live in New York, on the Lower East Side where I live, then you realize that you have a calling in life, or perhaps it's a forced calling, because you are, there are many other ways to make a living than being an artist. You never think when you write and direct your first film that an actor is going to win an Oscar, or an actress is going to get nominated, or a great music producer is going to win his first Oscar. I certainly don't make movies ever thinking that anyone in the Academy will embrace what I do. So that's a whole separate discussion, but the truth is you need to, at least for me, I was always moved by people who expressed themselves through their work, whether it would be another Virginian, Sally Mann, who's a photographer, and one whose work that I love, or Cy Twombly, who is a great Virginia artist, or whether it's the great Ralph Stanley, bluegrass, probably pioneer, along with Bill Monroe. So those are people who write or photograph about their life experiences, and that, of course, led to why I made Crazy Heart, but also it's for me. It's really about your artistic worldview. I'm much happier, although it's painful to do what I do if you write personal films like Crazy Heart and then certainly Out of the Furnace.
Yeah.
You know, difficult to write, difficult to live with, difficult to shoot, edit, and then most difficult is in putting it out to the world and let people who, who are fanboys or people who always want the movie to be something else, you know, take their shots at the film.
Yeah.
So it's a tough way to make a living. Tough way, to, not in terms of whether you make money or not, but just a tough way to exercise what it is that's within you to have to tell a story.
Oh God, I know. I know. I was talking to this director who I won't name, but very high profile director, and he was telling me that it's every film is a fight. You know, it's just a fight. It's a fight to get it made. It's a fight to stick to what you want. It's a fight then once it gets released with the critics and the fans and the now there's a layer of political correctness that gets applied to everything. And you guys are heroes. I mean, you know, yes, in one way you're lucky to be able to make movies, but in another way it's not an easy job to put all your life into and then have it either succeed or fail. That's got to be really, really tough. It's so easy for people to sit on their computers and just type away at something.
Oh my God, are you kidding? If I could just write film criticism all day about other people's work, come on, Sasha.
Having
the courage to go make something and leading a group of 200 people and really adhering to your vision and hearing no, 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 but continuing yes, yes, yes.
Yeah.
It's both exhilarating and it's also frightening and exhausting and can be dispiriting because, you know, we live in a soundbite world and it's either your movie's up for Oscars or it makes $100 million. And if one of those two things doesn't happen, it's deemed a failure.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
Right?
That's so horrible.
That's exactly right.
I mean, and how do you even, like, operate? You're one of the few, I think, who adheres to a creative vision. I found that with Out of the Furnace and with Black Mass. I really feel like that Black Mass,
you.
I think you took a giant leap forward visually as a director, even though Out of the Furnace has some amazing shots and people would say about you, oh, he's an actor's director because you come from acting, you really are good at getting performances out of actors and you don't short shrift any character. And those are like, you know, major strengths. But with Black Mass,
thank
I felt like, wow, that, you know, that's just, every shot is stunning. Really beautifully put together.
Well, thank you. You know, my work is, I tend to always want my work to be subservient to telling the story. It's all about character and emotion.
Mm-hmm.
It's about really holding up that mirror to life. And for some people, that's too difficult for them. I think in terms of Black Mass, people probably would have liked that film to feel more like Scorsese's masterful work. Which is, you know, much easier to take, and you can laugh, and you can wink, and kind of nudge your friends that what's happening on screen, you don't have to live with that.
Mm.
My work tends to be a little, probably a little more difficult to take in terms of a wide audience. And, you know, you make a film like this at great risk, at great peril, because, and I've said this, that many of my favorite films and the best films ever made live in the genre.
Mm-hmm.
Whether, of course, it's Scorsese or Coppola or Jean-Pierre Melville or Jacques Audiard's The Prophet or Matteo Garrone's Gomorrah, which is one of my favorite films. It's really great, excellent films that end up, your films, and fair or not, inevitably get compared to.
Right.
And I never set out to make a gangster picture. In fact, it's an anti-gangster picture because we don't glorify them. I don't romanticize them in any way, which is too easy to do, I think. And for some people, they just don't like that. And if they don't, they can go see Hotel Transylvania too.
Right. And that was another thing that impressed me about Black Mass was that I felt like you're right. The Hollywood has really romanticized the mob, not Gomorrah, not those kind of movies, but you know, obviously The Godfather, and you know, we have this like love-hate relationship with the mafia, And The Godfather actually, I think, started out being a lot darker, but Coppola, being a you know, an Italian, wanted to make it a warmer film. And then you get this kind of weird mix of hardcore violence and cold characters, but also there's a warmth to everything around there. I felt with your movie, it was more like, I think you really got to what the mob really is, you know, and how ugly and disconnected.
Well, it can be ugly, for sure.
Yeah.
And it can be unflinching, which is why I tend to photograph and choreograph violence in the manner that I do. Again, that also is a little disquieting for audiences. And, you know, my work isn't stylized, so you don't really feel like at times, for better or for worse, that you're watching a movie, but you're living in this world. And that also can be a little uncomfortable. But really, I truly believe that this was the only way to tell the story, because there were so many victims and victims' families, that to glorify these men or to criminalize them in any way would really would make it seem as though I didn't care about the ultimate result and these emotional wounds that still live with these families, and really the city of Boston in general, that it's kind of yet to heal.
Really?
So I think to really tell it in a kind of an unflinching manner was I think the best way to do this, because it's a film without any heroes. I mean, you know, people love the film The Departed, you know, which is one best picture and best director for Scorsese, and kind of, you know, told a fictionalized version of the story. But Jack Nicholson and Johnny's performances are different, and Johnny's is probably less fun, but certainly I think some of Johnny's best work.
Oh, I do too.
For a man who really would chill the blood of anybody that he comes in contact with.
It's incredible. How did he? I remember you talking with, I can't remember if it was Friedkin or someone else, but you were saying how different, obviously, Whitey Bulger is from Johnny Depp's real personality, because he's like the sweetest guy and the nicest guy, and so like sort of thoughtful and sensitive. So what kind of process did you go through with him, or did he go through, that helped him to transform into like the epitome of evil, which he is, I think, as Whitey Bulger.
Well, apart from the physical transformation, Johnny typically transformed, and as you see from the end of the film, we have photographic and video archival footage of Whitey Bulger that was provided to me by the FBI, surveillance footage. So we knew we would approach that look, but because Johnny is so mild-mannered and so soulful and gentle, I said to Johnny, that's why I think you can play this part, because I've never seen this from you. That's why I'm interested as a film fan, not only the director, but I also had never seen a sense of danger in Johnny's work. He typically plays very likable and empathetic characters, but I wanted to see a certain stillness and a certain banality and a certain coldness from one of the biggest stars in the world.
Yeah.
It's so far afield from who he is. Though Kuki's so mysterious, people don't really know that about Johnny, because there just isn't a whole lot about him. I mean, when he does interviews, he's typically funny, but he's really shy, and he's a really smart and really sensitive guy. So to see this transformation was mesmerizing, Sasha. I mean, it goes well beyond the 24-hour-a-day work that needed to go into his facade, but really about a stillness. And about a man who's very, very, I said to Johnny, look at these video images, he's extremely confident in his skin. Jimmy Bulger was. If you and I, Sasha, are having a discussion and we're standing 18 inches apart, you can bet that Jimmy's going to be standing 12 inches from you.
Okay.
And that and his arms very likely would be crossed. And that physicality is psychologically violating you in some way. Just as he does Julianne Nicholson when he goes upstairs and he face molests her.
Right.
Right? Or he's across the table from David Harbour talking about a secret family recipe. He's psychologically inflicting violence on these people. And I could see it from him in these videos. And he didn't tend to blink a lot. He was extremely confident in his physicality. And truly was a man that was very quiet, but when he struck, he struck quickly and with great deadly force.
Oh,
and those are the people that should scare you the most. And that's where Johnny and I started. And then you see that on screen, because Whitey also had these eyes that were really big and blue as people who knew him well told me that they were so piercing and big that they had difficult time maintaining eye contact with him.
Oh my God.
Because it was just like tear through your soul.
Oh wow. I watched the Whitey Bulger documentary before I saw Black Mass because I wanted to know, you know, what the official story was, and the thing about him that's weird is that he didn't, like, you know, he was so clean as a criminal, as a killer, and then you hear about the violence, but in your movie it was a chance to see just how savage he was, because, you know, obviously he denied it. He denied that he was that guy, and they had to prove it. Then people would say, this is what he did, this is who he killed, and he would always say, you know, no, I didn't do any of that. But the scene mm-hmm. where he brings June, it's Juno Temple, right? She's the one who plays the young woman. That's her name?
The young prostitute.
Yeah. That scene is just blood-curdling, because he walks her in there, and he makes her think that she's going to rent this house, you know, he's bringing her there as a nice favor, and he's making her think that she's saying everything right and doing everything right, and then he kills her. That is just a chilling scene, and that's
Really wanted to capture that all in one take, so that as we're coming back into the house, you see Jesse Plemons' character Kevin Weeks just step out, which alerts the audience to know that, oh my God, there's more to this story, and then all in one take. After he starts strangling her, we move over and just hold on her stepfather/lover's face and hear her orally dying.
Yeah.
And that is much stronger than actually seeing it.
Oh,
yet
yeah.
Yet holding on this man's face, on Rory Cochrane's face, as he's watching his daughter die. Because, in fact, Steve Flinney said, Rory's character, that was the only time he wanted to kill Whitey Bulger, is when he murdered her.
Oh, God. And then the next shot of them at the table where you see him absorbing that crime and sort of feeling the grief. You don't see a lot of these mob guys feeling grief, you know, or showing that.
Oh, yeah, right.
That
scene that's not what you quite expect from a gangster picture, unless you're watching Sexy Beast or some Gomorrah, something that I really love, in which you have those kind of moments. And that, for a general audience, can sometimes be tough, or people that really, again, want a more stylized version of a gangster picture that they're accustomed to, those critics that may have not taken to the film.
Right. Yeah, and you know, honestly about that, there's this weird thing about people. They just like to see other people fall, and I think that's the case with Johnny Depp.
Oh, boy,
did
they ever.
You know, he's just too big of a star.
Oh, he's a huge target on his back. Are you kidding?
Yeah, he's just too big of a star.
This is an actor who takes bigger risks than most movie stars would ever take for fear of moving outside of what makes them a movie star. Johnny Depp takes a risk every time out, whether it's in Mordecai, whether it's in Ed Wood, whether it's in Dead Man, whether it's Scissorhands. I mean, you're talking about one of the greatest actors who's ever lived.
Yeah.
And there are people who want to see him fail. And it's just kind of this kind of vitriol that lives on the internet that
That's
is
right.
so dispiriting. I really try to stay away from it as much as I can.
But
because
it's
if you
true.
Do, then you want to try to make films that will please those people, and you want to make films that will win awards and we'll have people regale you with plaudits. And in the end, that's not why people set out, or at least people that I respect, set out to make films.
And I don't think that noise impacts the film, because
You think it does or does not?
It doesn't. It doesn't affect the film ultimately, because Black Mass, to like regular people, to people I read about on you know, my friends who see it on Facebook, it's very different to them than it is to like the internet bubble, where they like to, you know, like whether it's Gwyneth Paltrow or whoever it is of the day that they want to see fail, and it's only because they're big celebrities, really. But
no question. Yeah.
So I don't think that they're giving him, but I honestly am not listening to them. I don't think that they matter. So I mean,
thank you,
in terms
Joshua.
Of
they
his...
certainly don't matter in my house. I really couldn't give two shits what they think.
Oh, good. I hope you don't, because you know you chose a business where you're going to be, and unfortunately, the internet adds another dimension to that. And it's not going to stop, really. It's just going to always be there.
So no, it's only going to get worse. I mean, look, there are easier ways to make films that people hail as Oscar-worthy films. You know, whether they're issue-oriented films or.
Right.
Films that talk about a certain dark period in American history, or I mean, so many other, or those that are very uplifting or sentimental. I mean, that's, you know, those are movies that tend to get rewarded.
Yeah, for sure. And if you're making that kind of movie, it's kind of easy to make it, like you say. You don't take any risks.
Oh, yeah, no question. Oh, yeah, please. Yeah.
But those movies don't last, is the problem. They are there for a minute.
Oh, no, no. I mean, I see some of those films, and by the time my head hits the pillow, I've completely forgotten them.
Same here.
And truly, Sasha, yeah. Time is the greatest arbiter and judge of a film's worth.
Right.
I saw Citizen Kane last night at the Arrow Theater, and that movie came out and was poorly reviewed, came in theaters, and went.
Oh yeah, I know it did. It's one of the. That's why I started my website with Citizen Kane, and that movie's perfect, and it holds up. And every year that you watch it, it just gets better and better. You know.
Oh, the best films for me, over repeated viewings, they get better and better and better.
Yeah, and you don't get that with an easy film that you can get all in one go. I mean, I saw Black Mass twice back to back, and I noticed almost a totally different movie the second time I saw it. And that, to me, is a movie that I like to watch over and over, is when I see something different every time. If you get the directors that I like and admire, do that. They don't give you everything all at once. And Oscar voters like the kind of movie that gives you everything all at once. You know, that's the irony.
Oh, of course. Indeed. Oh, so, yeah. Look, Kubrick never won an Oscar, neither did Hitchcock.
No, they didn't. I think. The best movies can't, because the best movies are the best art, and art is divisive. And if it's divisive, it's not going to win a big consensus of thousands of people. Yeah.
Amen. But, I love you, Sasha.
Well, I really admire your work, and it's just great to talk to you. And it's been really fun. I'm going to put this up as a podcast and write a little bit more.
Oh, God, really? So this is going to live on?
Is that okay? If you don't want it to.
No, sure, I'm fine. I have said this to anybody who will listen. I mean, it's in terms of what you and I have discussed, because it's just how I feel. And, you know, we all have a very short shelf life. And either you make films that you really, truly care about because they take so long, I mean, handcrafted films, handmade films, or you can just make stuff that you know will please a large audience, and you continue to do that. The movies that I make are very difficult to get made.
And I hope you keep making them. I really do. I'm counting on you.
Oh, thank you, Sasha. Let's continue this. See where I am next year.
Well, good luck with everything, and I will hopefully talk to you again.
Oh, thank you, Sasha.
Okay.
Have a great weekend. Bye.
You too. Bye-bye.